Dear friends, to love means to listen. Listening is very important practice. There is a voice calling us and want us to listen. It may be that our body is calling us and want us to listen to our body. It may be our feelings that are calling us and want us to listen to them. It may be our perceptions are calling us and want us to listen to them. It's very important for us to pay attention to the voice. The capacity of listening to ourselves is the foundation of the capacity of listening to others. The capacity to love others depends on the capacity of loving ourselves. I would like to invite you to practice with me the practice of listening to the bell. The sound of the bell is a kind of sound that helps us to go back and listen deeply to our need, to our suffering. Because only when we are able to listen to our needs and our sufferings could we begin to accept us and to love us. And our love for the other people, other beings, depends on this capacity of self-love. In my temple, we always listen to the bell. Every time we hear the sound of the bell, we follow our breathing to go back to ourselves and to listen deeply to ourselves. Listen, listen, this wonderful sound brings me back to my true home. To go home is a very nice thing. But to go home sometimes is difficult. Sometimes we are reluctant to go home because we are afraid that if we go home, we will have to touch the pain, the sorrow, the fear which is there. But there must be a way of going home that would not scare us. We have to learn a way to go home with loving kindness, with confidence. And we shall be practicing together. And tonight we shall begin with the practice of listening to the bell. During the practice, we just pay attention, we just listen. We don't think of anything else. We let the sound penetrate in deeply into our body, our feelings, and we listen to us. And we just enjoy listening. Please do not do any thinking. Just be there and listen and listen. The teaching of love presented by the Buddha is very clear. And true love can only make yourself and people happy. And the four aspects of true love can be described as Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, and Upeksha. Maitri means loving kindness. Maitri is defined as the capacity of making a person happy, to offer happiness. That is Maitri. It's not only the intention to make one person happy. The intention is not enough. It's not Maitri yet. That is why we have to say Maitri is the intention and also the capacity of making one person happy. To offer Maitri to someone. And the object of our love, of our true love, may be ourselves, maybe a person we have sympathy with, maybe a person we are very fond of, maybe a so-called neutral person, and maybe a person that we don't love at all, that we hate, that we dislike. So there are five kinds of objects. The first one being ourselves. The second one, the person with whom we have sympathy. The third, the person we are very fond of. And then the so-called neutral person. And finally, the person we dislike. The person we believe to be responsible for our suffering. And according to the tradition, we have to use ourselves as the object of our love first. Because like we have stated, our capacity to love another person depends on our capacity of loving oneself. If we do not have peace, joy within ourselves, we have nothing to share. We cannot make another person peaceful, happy. And therefore, it's very important that we practice so that we will have the element of peace, of stability, of freedom, of happiness in ourselves. Otherwise, we would have nothing to share. We cannot make another person happy if we are not happy ourselves. It's truly the teaching of the Buddha on love. So Maitri can be translated as la bienveillance, loving kindness, the capacity of bringing happiness to one person, to one of these five persons. And if there is no Maitri, your love cannot be called true love. A kind of love that can only bring sorrow and anger is not true love. The second aspect of true love is karuna. Karuna means the capacity of removing the pain in the person you love, transforming the pain in the person you love. This may be translated as compassion. But compassion is not the perfect word for karuna, because compassion is made of the prefix kom, together, and passion, to suffer. You don't really need to suffer in order to remove the suffering from the other person, like a doctor. He doesn't have to suffer the same kind of disease of his patient, and yet he can help his patient remove the pain in himself or herself. So karuna is like that. Karuna is the willingness and also the capacity of removing the pain in the object of your love. And the object of your love may be yourself. When we look deeply into the nature of our love, we find out whether there is the element called karuna, compassion, in it. If compassion, karuna, doesn't exist in our love, it's not true love. It's the kind of love that can only bring suffering, attachment, slavery, despair. And then the third aspect, the third element of true love is mudita. Mudita means joy. True love always brings joy to you and to the person you love. If your love is not bringing joy to you and to the person you love, it's not true love. You have to work to transform it. If you only cry, if the other person also cry, and then it's not true love. And the fourth element of true love is upeksha. It means equanimity. It means freedom. Equanimity means no discrimination. When we love someone, and yet that someone can retain his or her freedom to be himself, to be herself, and that person doesn't feel that she is in prison, the prison called love. She has space around her to move around. She has space within her heart. That's upeksha. And if your love deprives yourself and deprives the other as freedom, of space, that's not true love. So love in such a way that you can preserve your freedom and the freedom of the person you love, that is true love, that is upeksha. So the definition of love in Buddhism is very clear. Of course, when we practice looking deeply into the nature of our love, we may recognize these four elements, but they are still very small. And the opposite nature of these four things may be more important. That does not mean that we have to throw our love away, to stop loving. That means only that you have to practice looking deeply into the nature of our love and practice so that the element of maitri will grow every day. The element of karuna will grow every day. The element of mudita, joy, and the element of freedom, upeksha, grow every day. And the more these four elements grow, the happier you become, the happier the person you love will become. And if we practice looking deeply, we see that one aspect of true love contains all the other three aspects. When you say, for instance, I love whiskey, we know that whiskey is not something that will grant us freedom. If you get addicted to alcohol, you lose your freedom. And you remove the freedom from the person you love, maybe yourself. And if freedom is not there, joy is not there, compassion is not there, loving kindness is not there. So if one thing is not there, the three other things will not be there also. That is why we speak of the nature of interbeing of these four elements of love. If one of the four developed truly, and the three others will develop also. That is the nature of interbeing of the four unlimited minds. Because these four elements are sometimes called the unlimited minds, because you can develop it always. They can grow larger and larger, and they can embrace everyone, every living being in the world. And the Buddha is described as someone who has Maha Maitri, Maha Karuna, great love, great loving kindness, great compassion, great joy, and great freedom. These are the four unlimited minds, immeasurable. And this teaching is the teaching of love in Buddhism. Buddhist meditation has been described as stopping, calming, and deep looking. You cannot practice deep looking unless you stop. Stop running and begin to dwell in the present moment. I don't need to run into the future in order to have happiness. My true home is in the here and the now. And as we train ourselves to dwell in the present moment, we begin to see things more deeply. First, we may have the notion that there is only suffering, pain in the present moment. Of course, suffering and pain is there. But something else is there also. Stability, peace, and freedom is there also. Happiness could not be possible without peace in our heart. The children, although they are still small, but they need peace. We know that peace, stability, and some freedom are essential for our true happiness. And the practice is to bring to us the energy of peace, of stability, and of freedom. And when you go back to the present moment, you touch that moment deeply, you'll be able to touch peace, the stability, and the freedom that is there. Maybe covered up by worries, fear, anger, and so on. When you go back to yourself, to the present moment, with the energy of mindfulness, you would not be afraid of encountering your pain, your sorrow, your fear. We are made of the five elements: form, feelings, mental perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. And that is the territory, our territory. We are the king, we are the queen, ruling over the territory of the five aggregates, the five elements. But we have the tendency to get away from our territory. We want to seek refuge elsewhere, because we have the impression that if we go back to our kingdom, we will have to suffer because maybe there is a war in our own kingdom. There is pain, there is fear, there is anxiety in our kingdom. That is why our daily practice is to get away from our territory and take refuge in something else, to forget. And the practice that we do is the opposite. We go back to ourselves, to our true home, and try to rearrange the situation to make peace within our territory. When we go to the bar and get some alcohol to drink, that is because we want to escape the pain, the sorrow in us. If we turn on our television set, it may be because we don't want to be with ourselves. We want to cover up our pain, our sorrow. We want to watch a program of television. And we know that sometimes the program is not so good, but we continue to watch because we don't want to go home and to encounter the pain, the sorrow in us. And sometimes we pick up a book to read, not exactly because we are interested in the book, but we want to take refuge in the book in order to forget the pain, the suffering in us. But to practice means you are no longer afraid. You want to go home and restore the order, the harmony, the peace, and the joy that seem to have been lost within the territory of your five elements. And the secret of your success is the energy of mindfulness. Because with the energy of mindfulness, you will not be afraid to go home and encounter what is there. Mindfulness means the capacity to be aware of what is going on. Mindfulness is the energy of being there, really. Mindfulness is to practice being there. If you love and if you really care for someone, to take care of someone, you have to be there because the person you love needs your true presence. And my definition of mindfulness is to be there, to produce your true presence. So if you practice mindful breathing, breathing in, I know that I am there. Breathing out, I smile to myself. Suddenly your body and your mind come together and you become fully present in the present moment. And you go to the person you love, you look at her, you look at him, and you say, "Darling, I am really there for you. I am really here for you." And that is the practice of mindfulness, offering the person you love your true presence. Because the greatest gift you can make to your beloved one is your presence. Your true presence. There is someone else that needs your presence, your true presence. That's yourself. You may have been away from him or her for a long time. You have not been there for yourself. You always try to run away from yourself. You have to go home, go back to yourself, and offer yourself your true presence. This is the practice of mindfulness also. And that energy has the capacity of embracing your pain, your sorrow, so that your pain and your sorrow will be lessened. You alleviate your suffering. You know that when the person you love suffers, she needs your presence. And before you can do something to help him or her, your true presence already relieves a lot of her or his suffering. The same thing is true with you, with yourself. Your true presence offered to yourself can be already very healing. And to practice mindful breathing, mindful walking, and to offer your true presence to yourself is the first act of love. What we learn here is the greatest gift you can make to your beloved one is your true presence. And the declaration that you make has become a mantra. A mantra is something you utter in perfect concentration. If you are really concentrated, body and mind together, if you can produce your true presence, and then what you say will become a mantra. The mantra here is, "Darling, I'm here for you." So the mantra should translate the reality which is the true presence of the person who utter the words of the mantra. And a mantra can be said in your own language. You don't have to read a mantra, to pronounce a mantra in Sanskrit. In order for it to be effective, you can do it in English. "Darling, I'm here for you." And if you are really concentrated, if you are really there, your mantra will produce a miracle. You are real, the other person is real, life is real. And you can bring happiness to you, to the other person. And that is a miracle. The second mantra is, "Darling, I know you are there. And I am very happy." Again, this mantra can only be uttered when you are in perfect concentration, when you are really there. I remember there was so many times when looking at the moon, I breathed in and out deeply and I said, "Full moon, I know you are there and I'm very happy." I do the same thing with the morning star. And I remember last spring I was in Korea, walking mindfully among the magnolia flowers. I was so happy. Because I was really there, and the magnolia blossoms were also very real. So I looked at the magnolia flowers and I said, "I know you are there, and I'm very happy." It is really a real miracle if you know that you are there, and if you know that the other thing is there. So when you stand there and contemplate the beautiful sunset, if you are really there, you will recognize the beautiful sunset and you will appreciate the presence of the beautiful sunset. You look at the beautiful sunset, and you feel very happy. So once you are really there, you will be able to recognize and appreciate the presence of the other. The other may be the full moon. The other may be the northern star. The other may be the magnolia flowers. The other may be the person you love the most in your life. You practice breathing in and out deeply in order to recover yourself, to restore yourself. And then you go and sit close to the person you love. And in that state of deep concentration, you pronounce the mantra. You said, "Darling, I know you are there, and I am very happy." That is a real statement of love. And the statement is made with your true presence and not just a declaration of a speech. And when you pronounce that mantra, you are very happy. And the person you love is very happy at the same time. Life is real in that moment. And you nourish yourself. You nourish the other person with your mindfulness. You acknowledge her presence. You acknowledge his presence. And you appreciate his presence, her presence. And these mantras you can practice in your daily life. You know that in order to be a true lover, you have to practice mindfulness. Mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of sitting, mindfulness of walking, in order to produce your true presence. And in that state of being, anything you pronounce is a mantra. And you know that you can do it. It's not difficult. It's not complicated. And happiness is something you can produce just like this, a miracle. The third mantra is, "Darling, I know you suffer. That is why I am here for you." When you are mindful, you will notice that the person you love suffers. If we suffer, and if the person we love the most isn't aware of our suffering, and then we'll suffer more. That is why when we suffer, we want the person we love to know that we suffer. The practice of mindfulness helps you to notice the fact that the person you love is in difficulty, is suffering, and therefore we know what to do. First, to offer him or her our presence, because our presence, our true presence in that moment, will relieve her suffering, his suffering, a lot. So you practice deep breathing again to restore yourself, and you go to sit close to him, to her, and looking at him or her, or holding his hand, you say, "Darling, I know you suffer. That is why I'm here for you." It's a very important mantra. It will relieve a lot of suffering in the other person. Before you do anything, your true presence can already relieve a lot of suffering in the other person. And what the other person needs the most when she suffers is your presence, your true presence. And you know that you can offer him that. You can offer her that. And you know how to do it. Just mindful breathing. Mindful walking. Mindful looking.
No matter how young you are, you can do it. No matter how old you are, you can do it. The fourth mantra is the most difficult of the fourth. But if you know, if you learn a little bit, you'll be able to do it. The fourth mantra is practice when you yourself suffer. And you believe that it is the person you love the most that has made you suffer. The fourth mantra is like this: darling, I suffer, please help. That's five words. But many people cannot do it because of the pride they have within their heart. Yes, if another person said that to you, or did that to you, you would not suffer a lot. But it is exactly the person you love the most in the world that did that to you, that said that to you. That is why you suffer so much. You believe that your suffering has been caused by the person you love the most in the world. That is why it's so hard for you. You get hurt very deeply, and your pride prevents you from asking him or her to help you. You prefer to lock yourself in your room and cry silently. You want to tell him or her that you don't need him, you don't need her, you don't suffer. And that is the effect of pride. If pride is there, it means that your love is not true love yet. If you really love him or her, and then when you suffer, you have to go to him or to her and ask for help, because a lover is for that. There is a story that happened in my country several hundred years ago concerning a couple, a young couple, who suffered just because of pride. The young husband had to go to the army, to go to war, and he left his young wife pregnant. But 3 years later, he was released from the army and he went home. His wife went to the gate of the village to welcome him home and with the little boy. And when they met, they cried a lot, and their tears were the tears of joy. They felt very thankful to their ancestors for having protected them and supported them so that they had that day of family reunion. So according to our tradition, we have to announce that good news to our ancestors. And the lady was asked to go to the market to buy fruit, flowers, and other things to make an offering to be placed on the altar of the ancestors. In the meantime, the young father took care of the little boy, his son, and he tried to persuade the little boy to call him daddy, because that is the first time they met. But the little boy refused. "No, sir, you are not my daddy. My daddy used to come every night." "And my mother talked with him every night, and she often cried, And every time my mother sat down, my daddy also sat down. And when the young father heard that, he felt deeply hurt. He suffered quite a lot. He believed that there was a person who has intervened into his life and destroyed his happiness. So his heart became a kind of stone. He himself became a block of ice. When the lady came home, he did not look at her anymore. He did not talk to her anymore. She did not know why she suffered, but she did not ask. And after the offering had been placed on the altar, the young father came forward, lighted the incense, offered incense to the ancestors, pray, and made four prostrations. And when you pay respect to the Buddha, only three prostrations. But for your blood ancestors, you make four prostrations. That's in the tradition. And after having made the four prostrations, he rolled up the mat and did not allow his wife to do the same. In his mind, he believed that his wife was not qualified to present herself in front of the ancestors. So his wife got hurt deeply, did not understand. And he continued to behave like that for many days, 3 or 4 days. And finally, the young lady could not bear it anymore. She jumped into the river and got drowned. That night, when the young father lighted the lamp, kerosene lamp, suddenly little boy shouted, "Here, it's my daddy." So he pointed at the shadow of his father projected on the wall. "You know, sir, my daddy used to come every night like this, and my mother used to talk to him a lot and cry with him a lot. And every time my mother sat down, he sat down. In fact, the lady used to talk to her own shadow every night because she missed her husband too much. Darling, you have been away for too long. Alone, how could I raise the child and teach the child and so on?" So she cried with her own shadow. And of course, every time she sat down, the shadow will sit down also. Now, the young father understood, but it's too late. His wife is already dead. If the father had gone to the mother and asked, "Darling, I suffer so much." The little boy said that a person used to come every night, and you talk to him and you cry with him, and when every time he sit down, you also sit down. Who is that person? If the young father had gone and asked his wife about that, his wife would have had an opportunity to explain. And both could have avoided the tragedy, but he had not done so. That is because of the pride in him. And the young lady behaved very much in the same way. She was deeply hurt because of the attitude of her husband. But she did not come to him and ask for his help. She should have practiced the fourth mantra, "Darling, my husband, I suffer so much. please help. I don't understand the reason why you don't look at me. You don't talk to me. You didn't allow me to make the four prostrations before the ancestors. Have I done anything wrong? Please tell me, please help. If she had done that, and then the husband could have told her he's hurt, he's suffering, but she had not done that because she was caught also in pride. And you know that in true love, there is no place for pride. So I want my friends here not to fall into the same kind of trap. Next time, when you get hurt by the person you love the most, when you suffer and when you believe that your suffering has been made, has been caused by the person you love the most in your life, you have to remember this story. Don't do like the father of the little boy. Don't do like the mother of the little boy. Don't let pride stand on your way. You have to go to that person and ask for his help. Ask for her help. Practice the four mantra. Darling, I suffer. Please help. If you really consider him or her as the person you love the most in this life, and then you have to do that. And then when the other person hear that, he will come back to himself, she will come back to herself and practice looking deeply. And then both of you will be able to sort things out, to reconcile, and to dissipate what we would call a wrong perception. Because in our daily life, we might be caught several times by our wrong perceptions. We are humans. We make mistakes all the time. We have wrong perceptions all the time. We have to be aware of that. Sometimes we think of turning right, but we say, turn left. And we believe that we just said, turn right, but in fact, we have said, turn left. We made mistakes like that. And when we listen without mindfulness, concentration, we misunderstand the other person. So the Buddha said that wrong perceptions is what we are caught several times a day. That is why we have to be very careful not to be sure of our perceptions. Maybe you might like to write in calligraphy, the three words, are you sure? And stick it on your wall. As a bell of mindfulness. I know that when you open your heart and you touch the suffering of the people around you, you can relate to the people around you, and an energy of compassion, of loving kindness is born in you. It brings you a lot of relief. It brings you happiness. When we are able to generate the energy of compassion and loving kindness in us, we suffer much less. And in order for compassion and loving kindness to be there, looking deeply is the practice. When you look at these children deeply, you see that they are your mother, they are your father, they are yourself. And then to act in the name of love, of compassion, is so easy once your insight is there. The hatred, the anger we have concerning the other person prevent us to be happy, to be peaceful. But if we practice looking deeply into the other person, we see that that person also suffers quite a lot. That person does not know where to go. This person may be living in hell. He may be pretending to be happy, but he's not really happy. He's looking for happiness in the suffering. He is to be helped. She is to be helped. And maybe you are the one, the only one, that can help him or her. And if you have that kind of insight, suddenly the stream of compassion will be born in your heart, and you will suffer much less. The insight, as the fruit of your practice of looking deeply, is what that will liberate us. And Buddhist meditation is described first as mindful living and then concentration. You live deeply every moment of your life, concentrated, to be there really, and then looking deeply. Being there helps you to touch and to look deeply into what is there. And once the insight is there, there is no longer any difficulty for you to love, to accept. If you practice being there in the present moment for yourself, if you practice living deeply each moment of your daily life, you'll be able to get the insight about yourself and about the other person whom you think to be the cause of your suffering. And then you see that that person is not your enemy. That person is yourself. That person needs you to be transformed. And suddenly, the nectar of compassion is born into your heart. That is the Buddha. That is the Holy Spirit. That is God. God is available to you 24 hours a day. May I learn to look at myself with the eyes of understanding and love. May I be able to recognize and touch the seeds of joy and happiness in myself. May I learn to identify and see the sources of anger, craving, and delusion in myself. We know that after having practiced taking ourselves as of the object of love, we begin to change the word I into he or she. But we do not do that unless we have realized some understanding, some peace, some solidity within ourselves. Because we know that self-love is the foundation for the love of others. So after I and then he or she as a person we have sympathy with, and then he or she is the person we are very fond of, he or she that I have considered to be neutral. And finally, he or she that I consider to be the person who has made me suffer. The children in Uganda, the victims of war in the former Yugoslavia, the children in the native village of my mother, may be considered first as neutral, someone you don't know. But if you have some time touching them deeply, looking into them, they will cease to be someone neutral to you. They see that they are yourself. And suddenly compassion and loving kindness is born in you. And these people will cease to be so-called neutral to you. They become your love, the object of your love. And then finally, you come to the person you consider to be the enemy, the person who has made you suffer a lot. And with the practice of deep touching and understanding, that person will become the object of your love also. But first of all, may I learn to look at myself with the eyes of understanding and love. Many people cannot accept themselves. They are at war with themselves. They dislike themselves. They want to run away from themselves. Because they have not been with themselves. They have not been there for themselves and touch themselves deeply. Practicing looking deeply into oneself and to see the nature of the joy and of the pain within oneself, one will be able to accept oneself and to love and take care of oneself. Know yourself. Connect to Atomem. That is the practice of love. If we look deeply into ourselves, we find out the conditions that have made ourselves. And then we accept ourselves with our suffering, our happiness at the same time. And we know that to love is first to accept us as we are, to accept the other person as she is, as he is. And looking deeply, we see how that person has been made. It is like a flower is made only of non-flower elements. That person has been made of elements that are not him. His ancestors, his parents, his society, and so on. So once we see deeply all the conditions that have made him or her, we'll be able to accept him or her like that, and to begin with that, to take good care of him or her. In the teaching of the Buddha, it is clear that love is made of understanding. If you don't understand, you cannot love. If wife and husband do not understand each other, it's not possible for them to love each other. If father and son do not understand each other, they will not be able to love each other. To understand is to see all the difficulties, all the pains, all the problems the other is having. Also, the aspiration, the hope of the other person. If you ignore the suffering, the difficulties, the aspiration of the other person, how can you love him or her? So you may need the other person in order to understand him or her more. So as a true lover, we can always go to the person we love and ask for help. Darling, I want to love you and make you happy. But I do not understand you by myself alone. Please help. When you love someone, and if you do not understand him or her, you make him or her suffer more. This is always true. A father loving his son, but not understanding his son, will make his son suffer. And that is why a father, as a lover, has to come to his son and ask, "My son, do you think I understand you enough? Is my love making you suffer?" And the husband has to ask the wife the same question. because our love may be suffocating for the other person. Our love may be just a prison for him or for her, because we don't understand. We have not had enough understanding of the person we love. And understanding is the fruit of looking deeply. If you are not there, if you don't practice looking deeply, you won't understand. So the practice of mindfulness helps us to be there, to look deeply, to understand the other person. And as we practice, we need a sangha. We need the other person to help us. Darling, I really want to love you and make you happy, but I need your help. Tell me what is in your heart. Tell me your difficulties. Tell me whether my way of loving is make you happy or unhappy. That is the language of true love. And we know that in true love there is no pride. You need the other person in order to love properly and deeply. And that is also a treaty that the two people have to sign. As we love each other, we need each other's help. Pride cannot stand on our way. Prajna is understanding, and Maitri is love. The two things are the same. Whenever there is Maitri, there is understanding. Whenever there is prajna, there is Maitri. Whenever there is Maitri, there is prajna. So we have to understand the other person. The other person is not like us. He has his own pain, suffering, and difficulties, and aspiration. The other person may be your son, your daughter, your father, your mother, your spouse. We have to practice looking deeply in order to have insight into his nature, her nature. And we will need his help or her help to understand him or her. May I be free from disturbance, fear, anxiety, and worry. There are things in us that disturb us, that prevent us to be peaceful, to be happy. Like our anxiety, our worry. You worry too much. We are anxious about many things. We don't know what will happen to us tomorrow, after tomorrow. And the Buddha said that the future has not yet come. The past is already gone. There is only one moment when you can be truly alive, the present moment. If we practice looking deeply into the present moment, we will see that the present moment is made of the past moment. And the present moment is the substance with which the future will be made. And touching the present moment, we can touch the past, and we can touch the future. In this teaching, we can repair the past, because the past is still there in the form of the present. And if we touch the present deeply, we can heal the past. This is a wonderful teaching. Suppose in the past I said something not very kind to a person and made her suffer. And now she's no longer there. And I carry with me the regret. That suffering is still there in the present. And if I touch the present, I can touch the past. So touching deeply the present, I breathe in and out. And I smile to that person. I said, I'm sorry. Please enjoy breathing in with me, breathing out with me. I promise that I will never do that to another person from now on. When you practice like that, we can see that person smiling to you and the wound may be healed just because you have the capacity of touching the present. You can heal the past. You can always begin anew with the present moment. As for the future, there's no use to worry about future, because touching the present moment, we know that the future will only be made of the present moment. The best way to take care of the future is to take care of the present moment. There's nothing more you can do than taking good care of the present moment. So if you know the art of taking good care of the present moment, you don't have to worry about the future. Because you know very well that your worry, your anxiety will not help anything. Focus on the present moment. Live deeply the present moment, and you see what you can do in order to take the best care of the present moment. You cannot do more than you can do. The present moment is something you have to take care of. Walking, you have to walk deeply. Drinking water, you have to drink deeply. Drink your water in such a way that you have peace, that you have joy. And then the future will be assured. If someone who is close to you is no longer there, you may suffer quite a lot. You suffer not only because of the fact that he is no longer there, but you suffer because in the past you have not done what should have done in the past. And that is why you suffer so much. And therefore, taking good care of the present is the heart of the practice. We don't have to worry. We just have to go back to the present moment and take good care of it. We know what to do in the present moment in order to bring him or her relief and joy. Sometimes you quarrel because for the sake of the future, and you get angry at each other because you don't agree with each other on making plans for the future. Suppose you are having a fight with the person you love the most just because of the past or of the future. And you don't want to see him or so see her in the present moment because you are angry at him or at her. The practice is to close your eyes and to take a deep breathing and visualize you and the other person 200 years from now. And after three breathings like that, you open your eyes and you see the other person very differently. The only thing you want to do at that moment is to take her into your arms and practice hugging meditation. Hugging meditation is a practice of mindfulness. You practice deep breathing. Breathing in, I know the person I love is still alive in my two arms. Breathing out, I feel so happy. And if you breathe deeply like that, holding the person you love, the energy of care, of love, the mindfulness will penetrate into that person, and that person will be nourished. And she will bloom like a flower.
And you know that you have to do anything you can do this moment to make her, to make him happy, and not wait until tomorrow. So your projects about future is no longer too important for you to suffer. It's taking care of the present. That is the most important thing. You have to recognize the presence of the full moon, of the morning star, of the cherry blossoms, of the person standing in front of you. And this is our practice. And if you follow that line of practice, you will not be lost in your worries, your anxiety about future, and caught in the suffering concerning the past. The teaching of the Buddha is simple, not complicated. We only have to do it.